You came in 1927.
I came down in 27. I was appointed in late 26, and I commuted back and forth until the 1st of September. Then I moved down the 1st of September, and we lived on the top of the Washington Duke, which was before we built a house out in Hope Valley. And the medical school, we got started in February 1927. They laid the... didn't have bulldozers in those days, but mules and drag lines cleared out this old forest. It was in the Markham estate. There were trees actually 10 feet thick. I mean, I've never seen such virgin forest trees in my life. And Frank Brown and I toured all over the place and laid out the particular site. And we took the site at this end of the campus with a valley behind it, so we could get those extra stories on the medical school, because a two-story medical school, Gothic building, is silly, and a four medical story is bad enough, but we actually got five stories on the tail end of it by bending the building in the middle and taking advantage of the lay of the land. And then the first thing I did was to start the library. Is that a hospital library or is it a medical university library? Well, I knew that in the will there's more money for hospital than there is for the university. You're under that 90% rule. So I said, of course, it's a hospital library. Thank you, he said. Any money you want, let me know.
Well, that was the beginning.
So I started building a library right from the beginning, and we sent out for bids all over the world, and nobody else was buying books during that depression, you see, 28 and 29, and we got things that... ridiculous prices and delivered there. And so when the medical school opened, we had a working library right from the beginning. But then we started organizing the faculty, and Harold Amos was the first one, and Daryl Hart the second, I think Wiley Forbes was the third, and so on. Each one was appointed, he would sit in on the council about his next man in. And finally, by the 20th of July, we got the place open and operated. We wanted to open on the 1st of July, but a lot of equipment didn't come till the 19th, so we couldn't do it.
This was in 1930.
30, yeah. In 1930. We had a big open house, and they said there were 15,000 people that went through the building. And I spent all my time fixing elevators, because the elevators were holding 12 people, and 18 would get in, and they would get caught between floors. And I'm the only fellow around there that knew how to work the switches. So I'd have to crawl in from above or below to get them going. But first patient came in that morning, was a baby, and made a complete recovery. And that woman is now married and has several other children. She comes to Duke from time to time, and came over from Oxford originally.
Do you recall who that was?
I doubt if you do.
Yes, I got it written down.
That's the first baby born.
No, she was treated as a patient. She was about 9 months old when she was brought over. She had dysentery and whooping cough.
Somewhere along the line, Dr. Dave, there's a discrepancy. We just did a feature story recently on a man who was a construction superintendent.
Yeah, I know. He's a big liar. Daryl Hart registered
he
him
got
the night before.
Number one or something.
Yeah, but Daryl Hart got him as patient number one. But he didn't. Well, he wasn't patient number one.
They were both there the same day, I guess.
No. He got in the night before they opened it.
I see.
And Daryl got out. We were all friends in those days, but... And this first patient was actually patient number four, because they kind of flocked in the next morning on the 21st of July, and this child was brought in at 9 o'clock, and I checked up the times on the others. The next one was patient 9:15, 9:30, 9:40, the urological on Carl Lee was a very nice one. And appreciate it. I wish Carl could have been here today, because he built it.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
You see, most universities that they're doing now, which I think is very foolish, let out the buildings on individual contracts. What Mr. Allen said, the hell with that, organized the Duke Construction Company. And Dr. Flowers is president of the Duke Construction Company, and Seth Meyer was sitting over there, was secretary, and Mr. Norman Cock was assistant secretary, and Carl Lee was chief engineer for it. And we worked put up in that little schoolhouse, and if we wanted the thing built one way, we built it one way. And you didn't have to work for leave from a contract. Now, they built the women's campus by Fuller Construction Company. They're always having difficulty. If they want to change a door or change an electric outlet, the company made you pay for it. Right. Penalty.
Well, did you have any problem getting faculty in those early days?
No.
Everyone was interested in coming to this area.
No. They were not. I talked to a lot of people. We never asked anybody if they'd come. We just asked would they be interested, and we brought them down in, turned around. If they acted interested, well, we offered it to them, and if they didn't act interested, well, we didn't pay attention to it.
Well, I've often heard that the process that you mentioned that you went through of hiring the first member and then the two of you hired the third and the three of you hired the fourth probably resulted in a very harmonious relationship, which resulted
in people staying. We never used the word hired, by the way, which irritates me anyway. just appointed. We had the we didn't appoint. We had a recommendation for it. We'd make this recommendation to the trustees or to the president. And we recommended one man, and I sat in with the executive committee of the trustees that day, and it was some Methodist preacher was on the board at that time, and he said, "Dr. Few, what is this man's religion?" Few said, "That's got nothing to do with it." He said, "He's being appointed on his professional ability." And I never did find out what his religion was until years afterwards. He said he was a Christian. I said, "I knew that. I knew you weren't a Jew or a Mohammedan. What is a Christian? Why does he belong to the Christian church like Mr. Johnson does?" I never even heard of it.
And President Knight today.
He does?
Yes, he's a congregational Christian.
I didn't even know my father was a Methodist preacher. I never heard of the Methodist church. I met the Christian church before. But there are two colleges in the state that are maintained, Elon College and
Atlantic Christian,
yeah. Well, I found out a lot about it. But if the trustees had quizzed me on that, they had me stuck. But I would.
You were quite right.
A personal question: if you had it to do over again, would you establish the same place at the same town, the same type of school?
No, I'd have built a building like the Mr. Dukin did, and he said he wanted to build like the Princeton buildings. And that's the end of it, as far as I'm concerned. You had no choice. And no, if I had it again, I'd have built a VA hospital. I had a lot to do with that, and we persuaded the Veterans Administration in 46 or 47 said they were going to have a hospital somewhere down in the south, and didn't know whether to put it in Charlottesville or put it in Durham. And I went to the trustees about it, and I said, "I think it ought to be in Durham because it'll be useful from the teaching point of view, interchange of staff and so on. But it'll cost you about $300,000 a year in lost income." They said, "Why should it?" Well, I said, for example, if I wanted to get my prostate taken out, I'd go to the VA hospital for free instead of going to the Duke Hospital for $20 a day. And I said, there are thousands of people that are veterans that do that, and a great many of them still do. And fortunately, I haven't had to do it. But and we calculated, Daryl Hart and I did, that there are about $300,000 a year in unused rooms of patients who have gone to the VA for free. Well, they said, "If you think it's well to have it, we have it." So I was on the VA board at that time in Washington. We put it here, and they built a wonderful hospital. They're going to put an addition on it now.
Well, the architecture certainly is more functional for a medical
center. Oh, yeah. You've got to go up in the air because you save patients' time, orderlies' time. It's an eighth of a mile from my office to the end of the ward. Now with this new addition through Baker House, it's pretty close to a quarter of a mile.
Sure.
Well, you can't push patients around that distance, rather up and down elevators are pretty fast. Okay. And so no hospital ought to be built as anything less than 15 stories. And the new ones now go up to 30 and 40.
I watched the VA hospital grow with as much interest as you did. Most of the stories concerned
Cup was the first. And his son did Minuteman Medical School, so he had a hostage over him.
I had forgotten that.
Dr. Davidson, thank you, sir, very, very much.
I'm afraid I talked too long.
No, not at all.
Thanks, Dr. Davidson. Nice to see you again. Always.
I knew I'd get an argument. But gentlemen, how can you introduce a man like Dr. Davison, who for 34 years was dean of Duke Medical School? He organized, developed, directed the new medical center, and certainly one of the outstanding medical scientists and educators, the first dean, the Dean Emeritus of the School of Medicine, Dr. Davis. Now I have another problem. See all this material? This is on the next gentleman. But I'm not going to give it all to you. Suffice it to say that Ben Stahl is internationally known as one of America's 12 most famous artists. And he has done some very interesting things. And one that appealed to me most was in material that in 1950 he was commissioned by Esquire to travel 12 European countries, paint the most beautiful woman to be found in each, and write her story. Now, if he didn't have a wedge, I don't know who had. He also executed his famous portrait of Delilah, commissioned by Cecil B. DeMille for the picture Samson and Delilah. In 1954, he was commissioned by the Catholic Press of Chicago to travel the Holy Land and gather material for a set of oil paintings of the 14 Stations of the Cross to illustrate a special papal edition of the Bible. He also completed his first novel, Blackbeard's Ghost, published in 1965. And in 1966, the Walt Disney Productions purchased Blackbeard's Ghost for a movie. And since that time, the film has been completed with Peter Ustinov in the starring role, also including Elsa Lanchester. This could go on and on, but I do want you to realize that the Duke University School of Medicine received the full treatment. And he has just completed more than 2 years of work on a new set of 6 by 9 foot paintings on the Way of the Cross, which is now in permanent exhibit in his own Sarasota Museum of the Cross in Sarasota, Florida. Gentlemen, the artist, Mr. Ben Stahl. And the next gentleman who has cut his working day from 20 hours to 18 and is a very busy man, as we all know, and devoted his whole life to being dean of the medical school here at Duke, Dean William Hanley. If I may, I'd just like to take a moment to give you a look-see into the Collegiate Medical Program and how it started. In 1963, we prepared a letter to all the deans of all the medical schools, sent it to them, and asked them for a picture of their school suitable for framing, and we enclosed $1 for the picture. We received 6 pictures back, and they were all aerial views. So when we presented this program to the Association of American Medical College at their colleges at their meeting in Denver, I told them about this experience, and one of the deans stood up and said, "Yes, but did the other deans return the dollar?" I assure you, Dean Hanlon, they did. So that gave us the idea for the Collegiate Medical Program. A brief look-see at the program is that our art consultant in the fine arts meets with the artist and the dean and choose the location at the school which they wish to have painted. And then it gives us that rare privilege, as we have today, to present it to the school and to the deans. And then we also, like Ben Stahl, makes the second canvas of that painting. And that becomes part of the Squibb Collegia Medica collection. And this past week in San Francisco, we had a request from the American College of Physicians to display the painting. And so we displayed over 20 paintings at the meeting, and I will say that it was very well received. So this is the collection that Squibb has to use at meetings, at educational centers, and eventually to tour around the country. Number three, and I found this most exciting to the physicians out in practice, the alumni, is that we prepare a 10x14 reproduction in full color suitable for framing. And this is provided to the students, to the faculty, and mailed to the alumni. And we have found these around the country in many doctors' offices, and it proved our 63 campaign was right in the survey we made. So that today, as you leave the table out by the elevator, there will be reproductions for all of you here to take with you. And I think you'll find that this is the most interesting part of the program and certainly gives the school a wonderful opportunity to tap the alumni once more. Well, so much for that. And so now it's my pleasure to again to present our president, Mr. Ed Beckwith.
President Hart and Dr. Nicholson, Dean Davidson, an erstwhile neighbor of mine, I might say, Mr. Stahl, Dean Allen, gentlemen. It's a very heartwarming experience for those of us who represent a very old institution in our field of manufacture and research to be with those of you who represent a relatively young and very distinguished institution of medical care and research, and to present to you all this painting by Mr. Stahl. We are here in part in the program that Mr. Ballock has described to you, but in a very real sense to pay tribute to the standards and the ideals of excellence that have been your environment since the beginning of your school. And I think it's quite appropriate, really, that Mr. Stahl, who is so well known for his work through his medium, really, with the last hours of Christ's agony, and then with the message of healing and of goodwill and love that comes through the New Testament, that he should have been the man to do this particular painting. We don't come to Duke as strangers or to from afar, as Dean Davidson knows, and Dean Allen, I'm sure. In the last decade, we have been worked with you in more than two dozen research projects of various types. The range of these, even right now, is quite wide. We have one relationship, for example, dealing with solid tumors of the head and neck with Dr. Porter, and we're dealing with the problem of pediatric angiography with Dr. Kapp. And we've had a long relationship with your Department of Nuclear Medicine and with Dr. Lester and your Department of Radiology. And over the years, the range has been all the way from fungal diseases of the eye to attempts to find a decent substitute for autogenous bone. So that our relationship has been long, it's been extensive, and I think it's been very productive. And we come to you as friends and associates. Moreover, at Squibb, we are very honored to have as a member of our board of directors, Philip Handler. He brings to the highest councils of our company the viewpoints of impeccable science. He brings to us questions, on occasion good humor when we need it, and he's a person who could not be replaced in this part of our organization. I have two reasons personally why I'm so delighted to be here. I hope you'll forgive me for interjecting them, but Dr. Knight, who couldn't be with us today at noon because of a schedule problem, and I were classmates a very few years ago in New Hampshire. So were his wife and my wife at Northampton. I must say that looking back on it, even then he was far more erudite than I am, that his distinguished career in the academic world was in broad terms at least predictable, and that it was certainly a career that I could never have attained even if it had occurred to me. For another, I have a photograph of my wife taken on the approaches to the chapel on the day of the Duke-North Carolina game in 1941. I have another photograph taken at the same spot last fall, 25 years later, when we brought one of our children here to be an undergraduate. And I note that the chapel is showing some signs of aging and that the trees have changed shape. And I'm delighted to tell you that equivalent changes are not detectable in the girl. And so for personal reasons, obviously, but also for my many associates who have worked so closely with so many of you, and for our fascination with your concepts here of medical education, some of your new approaches to the problems of diagnosis and the technique and method, and for our regard for your South American radio support, which I think is one of the most exciting things that you do, and simply because of our appreciation of Duke as one of the, truly the world's great medical schools and medical centers, we are very pleased to be here with you today. Dr. Davison, since you and I have rehearsed so thoroughly, I wonder if we might step over into the corner. I can operate either way. But it's with a great deal of pleasure that we present this to you and to the medical school. This is Mr. Stahl's portrait of the school.
On behalf of the medical school, as well as personally, I certainly appreciate this opportunity conveying, as it were, the portrait to the school, and I know that every graduate we have will be delighted to have a reproduction of it. I have a small collegiate medical program of my own, namely to try to find the photographs of the 8 preceding medical schools in North Carolina. We're listed in the AMA under the computer system as 036-07. 036 meaning North Carolina and 07 meaning the 7th school. Well, actually, we're about the 9th school, and I've gotten pictures of 8 of them, including the one down at Wilmington. And this is the most recent addition. Now, the other thing which I would like to mention is the fact that this is the only Gothic medical school in the world. I've seen almost all the medical schools in the world, except in Australia and South Africa. And nobody would have sense enough to try to make a Gothic medical school. But Mr. Duke rebuilt Old Trinity College, and he got so disgusted, but don't quote me on it, it looks like public school number 24 or some national post office. Well, Trumbauer, who was a great salesman, took Mr. Duke down to Princeton, and I heard the quotation. Mr. Duke said, "These Princeton buildings please me." So he said, "The hell with this woman's college, and if you can get a few thousand acres in Durham or in Charlotte." Thank God we should, I didn't do that. Well, it was Durham, but in Charlotte he would build it. They built a university for men. And Trumbauer got together a lot of pictures of Gothic buildings and built a replica of what he thought would be the medical school. It stretched from here to here. Seth, you remember those things, I think it's dumped in the basement of the chapel now, but it used to be up in the Duke Endowment offices in New York. And and then started building it in 1927. The interesting thing is that you just can't build a medical school in Gothic. The Gothic building is 2 stories, because they didn't have elevators in those days. By a great argument with Trumbauer, we got it to go 4 stories. And then we got it to get set 2 more stories, we turned it around on the side and took that to the side of the hill. But to get windows in it, because in the Gothic days they were taxed on the amount of window glass and so on, we had to redesign all these windows. These windows are actually part of a big window and not an individual window as they show there. These windows here are part of a general big window, so that it's running up several stories. But anyway, the thing that interested Seth Myatt and myself, because he and Mrs. Few and Carl Lee and I are the only survivors, and George Hackney, the only survivors of the group that built the damn thing. We set up this group and abandoned Negro schools. So it's sort of race relationship on that. Oh, it was a bakehouse now stands. And well, how we all got in there, I don't know. But we bought our lunch and did a field and worked on the thing. And by the grace of God and a lot of manipulation, we got enough to start a medical school out of this Gothic building. But it was one of the hardest jobs we ever had because it was just Gothic structures were never designed for medicine. I wanted to build something like the VA hospital. We've got 10, 15 stories. Oh no, that Mr. Newton wants that tall, so we, this is what we got. The way it was designed was amusing. I mean, Seth Meyer over there and I used to go up to Mr. Trumbauer's office until the office time to time, and he had a magnificent collection of Gothic buildings. And he cut them up and little things he liked. I mean, this happens to be a copy of Trinity College, Cambridge. present architect you have here, Duke, said it was a copy of Hampton Court, which is a lie because Hampton Court is built out of brick and it's not Gothic. I know that one of our buildings down on the campus is a copy of Saint-Jacques Church in Paris, a little thing sticking up on one turret. And another, the chapel itself is a copy of Canterbury Cathedral. And so he'd cut out these things he wanted. Then he had an assistant, Seth and I know very well, who would put these pieces together like a child's crossword puzzle, and the result was the Gothic building. The non-original stick in the old envelope. Blackburn has written a very interesting book on the buildings at Duke University, but he wouldn't put anything like that in there. I hope I'm not being quoted. But I want to thank you again on behalf of the medical school and the university for this portrait, which I know will be cherished by every one of our graduates. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor.
I might say I added to all of this confusion by putting in a flowering tree.
Well, now that's been very clearly explained to you. Thank you, Dr. Davidson, very much. Thank you, Ed, gentlemen, for coming today and honoring us with your presence for the presentation of this painting. Your schedules are busy, I know, and it's hard to take time, but we appreciate your doing so. I'm confident in the years to come, Duke University Medical Center will continue to adapt, experiment, and innovate in all aspects of its functions, basing changes upon its traditions and upon its aspirations for service to mankind everywhere. Thank you very much.